plus one. East Side, Outpost, New Kerguelen. As well as the adjustable headset, which seemed like exactly what he needed to cure Piper of her uplift affliction, Dan saw countless other devices in the open box next to Sacco, as well as a few the alien had already lifted out, having apparently found them worthy of a closer look. Recently revealed as New Kerguelen's foremost expert on complex communication, Sacco was greatly intrigued by the bounty of devices before him. His curious expression and keen attention suggested that many were new to him, which raised all kinds of novel questions on top of those already swirling like tornadoes in Dan's mind. "Telepathy only," Sacco said, handing a small black square to Dan with no further explanation. Dan took the object and studied it carefully, with Billy leaning in close over his shoulder. It resembled a small fabric patch in appearance, but certainly not in texture. The best Dan could do was liken its surface to that of the thin, gel-filled ice packs Clark had often used on sporting injuries in his youth. The patch was small enough to sit comfortably in the palm of Dan's hand, but Sacco quickly told him it was supposed to go on his neck. "If the child did not need a device to remove the core powers, and if you wished for one to safely utilize telepathy on Earth, these would be perfect," the alien continued. "With one on each of your necks and given sufficient proximity, you would be able to communicate. In the Great Shelter, we have similar patches for temporarily granting telepathic understanding to members of non-qualified castes, but these, explicitly requiring both communicators to wear one, are new to me."
"Jesus," Billy said, gazing ever more intently at the small but immensely powerful device in Dan's hand.
"Can we take some of these home?" Dan asked. "If you don't need them all."
"Of course," Sacco said.
Billy patted Dan on the back.
"What are you going to do? Sell them to Phil?"
Both men laughed merrily and loudly, bringing forth a Leisha-esque smile from the typically more reserved Sacco.
"But seriously, these are absolutely perfect for studying on Earth," Dan went on. "Sacco said they're proximity-based and only work when both people are wearing one, so there can be no surprise intrusion or anything like that. These things could deliver all the big benefits without any of the big drawbacks."
"It's like the polar opposite of the Greater X-3000, Billy mused as he continued to run his fingers over his patch's pleasantly smooth surface.
"The Greater X is basically a walkie-talkie that some people think could have blocked telepathy, and these are basically walkie-talkies that enable telepathy. But say, Sacco, these exact devices are new to you, correct?"
"Correct. I have seen similar patches, but not of this kind requiring two-way engagement."
"See, that's the part I don't get," Billy said. "If you've never seen these things, how do you know that? How do you know about the requirement for two-way engagement or for proximity? It's not like there's an instruction manual in there."
From where Dan was standing, this was a damn good point. With his own mind having skipped over the detail among everything else that was going on, he was glad to have the ever-attentive and ever-inquisitive Billy by his side.
"Ah, of course," Sacco continued. "You lack the ability to interpret our transcripts."
Dan and Billy looked even closer, wondering if their eyes simply couldn't read some tiny alien text or whether there was something their eyes or minds couldn't even register.
"What are those? Invisible writing? Just like text we can't see?"
Billy asked, taking the words from the tip of Dan's tongue.
"Not text as you know it," the alien replied.
"Hieroglyphs?" Billy prodded. "Pictographs?"
Sacco appeared to spend a few seconds considering how to explain the so-called transcript to his human guests, which gave Dan the impression it must have been pretty complicated.
"Our transcripts are not photographs," Sacco began, "but they instantly convey rich information in a similar manner."
"A picture in your mind?" Billy asked. "So, looking at a short transcript makes your mind see something? Almost like a QR code, maybe?"
he said, naturally turning to Dan with this more Earth-specific reference.
"It's just a little black and white square, but your phone's camera interprets it in a way your brain can't. And voila, a few seconds later, you're watching a video or listening to a song."
Dan mused. Billy's metaphor made the idea slightly easier to get his head around, but it was still difficult to fully understand.
Is that basically it, Sacco? You look at one of these transcripts and you just know what's encoded within it? You just see it?
Yes, the alien replied.
Okay, Billy said, inhaling deeply. This is important. Can all of your kind interpret these transcripts, or is the ability to do so an uplifted power?
Uplifted, Sacco said.
Dan had a feeling where Billy was going, and he didn't like it. I'm just going to say it. I don't think any of this stuff was made by your ancestors.
Billy very suddenly and very boldly blurted out to Sacco.
I don't think these cables were, I don't think these patches were, and I don't think any of these transcripts were.
Although neither of the humans heard any reply, Sacco's confused expression implored Billy to go on. He did.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, isn't it? These giant aliens granted you guys the uplift powers in the same way you granted them to us. They visited you the same way they visited us and the same way you visited us. The big difference is that they seem to have stayed here. But who knows what we're going to find when we finish excavating everything at Dortolu Tepe.
What we know for sure, Sacco, is that the chairs and headsets over there are a perfect fit for the alien and the carving my team found in Turkey.
There's a cable in that carving too, just like yours, and all I'm doing here is putting two and two together. You introduced the cables and the powers to us, as in modern humans, but these giants introduced them to you and might have introduced them to ancient humans, too.
A typically odd-looking, browless frown now spoke for Sacco, indicating to Dan that not only did he still fail to see the logic in Billy's point, but also that he was now becoming perturbed by his persistent supposition that the messenger's ancestors were merely recipients of remarkable technologies and not its creators.
These patches are absolutely incredible, Billy said. But I just don't think they were made here. Sacco, I don't think any of this stuff was of your race's invention. I think it all came as part of the other race's intervention. Think about it. If one of your ancestors invented the idea of the transcripts, which none of you can understand without being uplifted, where did the first transcript uplifter come from? If a cable gives you the power to even see the transcripts, how does it make sense that someone could invent something before he had the power to see it? Surely the cable or device that grants this power could only come from someone who already had this power. Don't you see how it's a circular logic problem?
No, Sacco said, this time deciding to disengage by quickly returning his attention to the rest of the devices. It seemed as though his apparent vexation had gone, like he had now dismissed Billy's bold theories out of hand, rather than taken any serious exception to them. This latter point came as a relief to Dan, but the absence of any counterpoint left a gaping hole in his understanding. It was more of a void than a hole, really, and with Sacco more interested in the actual devices than the broader context of where they came from, it was one that seemed unlikely to be filled. Dan found himself incessantly wondering what Sacco was thinking in terms of the bigger whys and hows regarding the outpost, the giant chairs, and everything else. But the fact that Sacco ignored these thoughts, which he could obviously hear, told Dan that he really wasn't interested in discussing it right now. In one sense, this did fit with Dan's prior messenger-related experiences, given that they always seemed to be far more enthralled by things they could see and touch than by things they had only heard about. Abstraction either wasn't their strong suit or simply wasn't as interesting to them as the here and now, and nothing could ever speak more strongly of this point than the total focus Sacco was giving this box of relatively familiar devices. In favor of the much bigger questions the humans were asking themselves about this remarkable and as yet inexplicable outpost, of which the remaining devices were barely a footnote in their list of inquisitive priorities, Sacco looked at each cable and device in turn like a shopper looking for the best banana in the bunch.
Level with me, Dan whispered to Billy, the low volume instinctive but essentially pointless. What do you think is going on here? What is this place? Where are the giants? Why do they have radios? And what the hell are we supposed to think about the elders being radios? Was it the giants who spoke to them via the elders from here and now they're gone? I want to know why they left, but I want to know why they came here in the first place.
Billy Kendrick, probably the one person in the world Dan would have chosen over any other to be there right now given his unmatched ability to think outside the box and his lifelong interest in all manner of ancient visitation theories, scratched his chin in deep thought. They were good questions, but it was difficult to know where to start.
What is with these shelters? Dan asked, homing in on that for starters.
Maybe the giants arrived from somewhere else and built both shelters so they could survive? Billy said. The atmosphere might have been unsuitable for them, who knows? I'm just thinking they might have needed an atmosphere they could control or even just wanted one. The same way people who live in nice temperate climates still have houses instead of sleeping outside.
But Billy, whoever was on the other end of the radios told the messengers they couldn't go outside.
Dan trailed off, struggling to even formulate a coherent question to get to the bottom of a mystery deeper than any he'd ever encountered.
I'm working with incomplete data here, Billy shrugged.
But where does any of this fit in with the machines being radios? Dan asked. And why would the messengers need a shelter just because these visitors did? Maybe there was an event that poisoned the air or something? You know, like Earth gets volcanoes, ice ages, even just solar events that make the atmosphere intolerable, plus stuff like nuclear fallout. We have literally no idea about the history of this planet.
Ben-li-nu-ta,
Leisha called, reminding the others of his presence at the very center of the outpost.
Shil-van-lur,
Sako replied, equally melodic. Neither messenger turned to face the other, with Leisha still looking in the opposite direction and Sako still rifling through his box of devices. After some careful searching, he lifted out two patches which closely resembled the one in Dan's hand, aside from being triangular rather than square.
For interpreting the transcripts, Sako told them, walking behind Dan and gently placing one of the patches on his neck, before moving on to Billy to repeat the process.
Neither felt anything beyond a slight coolness as the smooth surface met their skin. Each patch seemed to actively attach to the skin once applied, but not in any penetrative or invasive sense.
They are just as painless to remove,
Sako added, preemptively answering a question Dan hadn't even gotten around to vocalizing.
So, can we see one? Billy asked.
Sako reached into Dan's hand where he took hold of the patch Dan had been holding and turned it upside down. Overwhelmed by sudden insight, Billy took several sudden steps back in a manner that passably resembled Leisha's reaction to picking up Piper's telepathic thoughts for the first time. Dan, on the other hand, stared intently at the patch. Within less than a second, he simply knew its requirements. Proximity, worn by each participant, and worn with the express knowledge and consent of each participant. That the last part was new knowledge was enough to convince him that he really was interpreting a so-called transcript, which he couldn't see in a visual sense, rather than merely remembering what Sako had already told him. Somehow, and in some way, the transcript had delivered the information. Dan didn't hear any words about knowledge and consent, he didn't see any letters or clear images, and he quite simply didn't have any way of describing, let alone explaining, what he had just experienced.
Now this one, Leisha said. Sako, you too.
The group of three walked to meet him, at which point he proceeded to guide them over towards the south side of the outpost, where his dejected eyes had been focused since he first arrived. Here lay another machine that didn't look much like the radios on the north side, but rather a control interface of some kind. This was guesswork, since Dan couldn't see any dials or buttons as he would have imagined on a human control interface, and he was still too far away to have picked up on any transcript.
At the top, Leisha said.
Dan directed his eyes to the topmost of several divisions on what now seemed to be a screen of some kind. There, he immediately knew, was the transcript Leisha wanted them all to see. This invisible transcript, the second Dan had ever interpreted, was nothing like the first. It was revelatory rather than instructional, delivering a complex and somewhat convoluted series of mental images and sending pseudo-verbal thoughts flashing through his mind at 1,000 miles a minute. Dan truly felt as though his brain was being worked to its limit, with an absolute deluge of information arriving at once. He felt like someone had plugged one end of a cable into his neck and another into a supercomputer, and after only 3 or 4 seconds, easily the most neurologically intensive he had ever experienced, Dan quite simply had to look away. He saw immediately that Billy had blinked even sooner, but both had picked up enough to know why Leisha was so upset, and both knew that Sacco was all but certain to fall into a similar depression now that he too had seen the awful truth. For his whole life, and for the past 3 years in particular, Dan McCarthy had known that the truth was a complicated thing. Some truths could bring people together. Some could drive them apart. Some truths could heal old wounds, while others could hurt like hell. Never for a second, though, had he ever imagined stumbling upon a truth like this. Never had he imagined uncovering a lie like this, which utterly dwarfed Richard Walker's infamous hoax in both scope and effect. But most of all, never in his worst nightmares had Dan McCarthy pictured any expression so broken as those currently worn by his friends Leisha and Sacco. This reaction was the only thing Dan could currently understand, as it was the only appropriate reaction to the truth they had just learned about their civilization's great shelter. That it wasn't a shelter at all. It was a cage.